Imagine waking up on a Monday to find gold breaking these historic sky-high records, only to watch it fall completely off a cliff just 48 hours later.
Yeah, a total free fall.
Right. And while you're trying to make sense of that, you look over at the energy sector, and crude oil prices are basically, strapping themselves to a rocket. Welcome to the deep dive.
It's great to be here for this one.
Today, we are looking at a wildly fascinating financial review focusing on six very specific, very chaotic days for you, March 1st to March 6th, 2026.
It really is a phenomenal case study. I mean, we tend to think of global finance as this rigid, mathematically precise machine,
Right,
right?
like it's all just spreadsheets.
Exactly. But when you zoom in on this specific week, you realize that the global commodities market is actually just a tug of war between raw human emotion and, well, cold automated machine logic.
And that is exactly our mission for you today. We are going to decode what our source material calls the emotional passwords of the market.
I love that phrase, emotional passwords.
It's so accurate. We want to show you the underlying mechanics of how global fear, greed, and algorithmic programming drive these massive price swings.
Yeah, because the goal is that the next time you see a breaking news alert about a market crash or a surge, you won't feel overwhelmed.
Exactly. You'll actually understand the hidden gears turning behind the scenes.
And we have the perfect contrast to explore that today. You have one asset, gold, behaving like a roller coaster.
And another asset, oil, acting like a rocket ship.
Right, all within the exact same 6-day window, reacting to the exact same global events.
So let's start with the roller coaster. We're looking at March 1st and 2nd. The month opens and buyers are just rushing in.
Oh, flooding in.
On March 1st, London spot gold hits $5,276.20 per ounce. That is a 1.77% jump in a single trading session.
Which is massive.
Right. I mean, for a heavy established asset like gold, moving nearly 2% in one day is a structural earthquake.
It is, and the momentum was truly global. Like, the source data looks closely at the Chinese domestic market during this window too, tracking a variety called AU99985.
For anyone unfamiliar, AU99985 is just the standard physical gold benchmark traded over there, right?
Exactly, yeah. So on March 2nd, that specific gold variety jumped nearly 6% in a single day.
Wow. 6%.
6% with
Oh.
trading volume just blasting past 50 million RMB.
Okay, so whenever we see a rush like that, the immediate question is, what were people running from?
Right, the panic catalyst.
Yeah, and our source points to two massive catalysts happening simultaneously.
Yeah.
First, you had rapidly escalating geopolitical tension in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And second, the market was heavily baking in expectation that the U.S. Federal Reserve was about to cut interest rates.
So let's break down how those two separate catalysts actually feed into the exact same trade.
Okay, lay it out for us.
Well, when there's a sudden threat of a regional conflict, capital gets terrified. Institutional money managers look for a safe haven, and gold has been the default financial panic room for thousands of years.
Sure, that makes sense.
But the interest rate piece is equally critical. When the Fed cuts interest rates, the US dollar typically weakens because, it yields less return.
Right.
And because gold is priced in dollars, a weaker dollar makes gold cheaper for international buyers, which then drives the price up.
Okay, let's unpack this. Buying gold during a geopolitical crisis makes total sense to me. It's like buying flood insurance when you see a hurricane forming off the coast.
That's a great way to put it.
You're going to pay a massive premium, but you do it just in case. But I really want to push back on the motivations of the big Wall Street players here.
Okay, go for it.
Did institutional investors actually believe the global financial system was going to break that week? Or were they just trying to front-run the retail investors who, watch the evening news and panic?
Ah, that is the crucial distinction to make. It's largely the latter. Speculative money amplifies genuine anxiety.
So they're just playing the crowd.
Exactly. The hedge funds and the institutional algorithms, they process the Middle East headlines in milliseconds. They know that by Monday morning, everyday retail investors are going to be frightened and will start buying gold.
Right, they see the writing on the wall.
So the speculative money buys it first on Friday.
So they are buying the gold because they want to hold it during a war. They're buying it to sell it to the terrified person behind them in line.
Yes.
It's like buying the last generator at the hardware store during a storm warning, purely to mark up the price for the next guy who walks through the doors.
Precisely. I mean, they are trading the anticipation of fear, not the metal itself.
Wow.
And this creates a self-fulfilling prophecy. The speculative buying pushes the price to that historic $5,276 mark.
Which generates more dramatic headlines.
Right, which brings in more buyers who are simply afraid of missing out on the rowler.
But the storm clouds didn't burst exactly as expected, which brings us to the sudden, and I mean violent, reversal just 24 hours later.
The crash.
Yeah. We move into March 3rd through the 6th, the fever breaks. By March 6th, the London price drops below $5,100.
Ouch.
Nearly $300 of value is wiped out from its late February high in a matter of days. And the source notes that in China, the Shanghai Gold T plus D plummeted over 60 RMB in just 2 days to around 1133 RMB per gram.
The mechanics behind why that panic room suddenly emptied out are just fascinating.
Because the war didn't start.
Right. The Middle East conflict, while incredibly tense, didn't immediately escalate into a wider regional war during those specific 48 hours. So the immediate, heart-pounding fear began to recede.
Everyone took a breath.
Exactly. But the human relief was really only half the story. The underlying financial math of the global economy fundamentally shifted at the exact same time.
You're talking about the bond market. Because the source points out that U.S. 10-year Treasury yields climbed back above 4%, with some new issues nearing a 5% return.
Yes. And to understand why a 5% Treasury yield destroys a gold rally, we have to look at a concept called opportunity cost.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Let me see if I can frame this.
Go ahead.
At the end of the day, gold is basically a shiny rock. It doesn't pay you rent. It doesn't produce quarterly dividends.
Nope, nothing.
It just sits in a vault. And you actually have to pay someone to guard it. So if I'm managing a $1 billion pension fund, why would I hold a non-yielding rock when I can buy a U.S. government bond that guarantees me a 5% payout every single year?
You wouldn't. It's that simple.
Yeah.
When bond yields go up, the opportunity cost of holding a non-yielding asset like gold becomes painfully high.
You're losing money by missing out on the bonds.
Exactly. The institutional money looked at the landscape, realized the regional war wasn't starting that Tuesday, saw that guaranteed 5% return sitting over in the bond market, and immediately dumped their gold to buy treasuries.
But the sheer speed of the drop still bothers me. I mean, a $300 drop in a few days is incredibly steep. Human beings, even highly trained portfolio managers, don't change their minds that uniformly and that quickly.
No, they don't. And that is where the machine logic takes over.
The algorithms.
Right. The source material highlights a specific trigger in the Chinese domestic market. When the price fell below a very specific floor, the 11,140 RMB support level, it triggered a massive wave of quantitative trading algorithms.
Okay, we need to unpack what a quantitative algorithm actually does in this scenario, because it sounds like the robots just decided to panic sell.
Think of it like the thermostat in your house.
Okay.
You set it to 65 degrees. The moment the temperature in the room hits 64, the heater kicks on automatically.
Right. There's no human turning a dial.
Exactly. It's a pre-programmed rule. Financial algorithms work the exact same way, using what are called stop-loss orders. Hedge funds program their computers with a strict rule. If the price of gold drops below 1140 RMB, sell our entire position immediately to prevent further losses.
So they don't read the news, they don't care about geopolitics or, you know, bond yields. They just read the number, see the floor break, and execute the sale.
Exactly. And this is compounded by the fact that many of these traders were using the Shanghai Gold T plus D market. T plus D is essentially margin trading.
Meaning they were trading with borrowed money.
Right. When you buy gold with borrowed money and the price drops, your broker demands that you put more cash into your account to cover the difference.
A margin call.
Yes. And if you don't have the cash, the broker automatically sells your gold. So you had human relief that the war paused, combined with human greed for a 5% bond yield, triggering this soulless, automated avalanche of algorithmic stop losses and margin calls.
That is a brutal cascade.
Yeah.
The humans start the fire, and the machines just burn the house down.
That's a great way to put it.
But here is the massive contradiction of this six-day window. While algorithmic trading and bond yields were dragging gold down to the basement, real-world physical supply chains were simultaneously lighting a fire under crude oil.
The contrast is brilliant. You have gold, which is a paper trade driven by sentiment, versus oil, which is a physical necessity driven by logistics.
Let's look at the scale of this oil surge. By March 6th, WTI crude jumped 8.51% to break the $80 barrier.
Hitting $81 in one sunset.
Right. And Brent crude surged nearly 5% to $85.41. Overall, we are looking at an 18% weekly gain, hitting the highest levels the market had seen since January 2025.
And the source notes that the oil volatility index broke past 70 during this window.
Okay, we need to put that number into perspective. A normal, calm trading environment usually sees the volatility index sitting somewhere around, what, 15 or 20?
Roughly, yeah.
So hitting 70 doesn't just mean the market is active. It means the market is in a state of sheer, unadulterated panic.
And from a logistics standpoint, the panic was entirely rational. Unlike gold, which just sits comfortably in a vault, oil has to physically travel across oceans every single day to keep the global economy functioning.
Right, you can't digitally download a barrel of oil into a refinery.
Yeah.
Now, before we get into the exact logistical choke points, I want to explicitly pause and remind you, the listener, of something important.
Good call.
The source material attributes this spike to the U.S.-Israel-Iran confrontation. We are strictly reporting the facts of the source text here to explain market movements. We are not taking any political sides.
Right. We're just looking at the mechanics.
Mm.
And from a pure market mechanics standpoint, traders looked at that confrontation and saw a massive physical threat to global supply chains.
Centered on the Strait of Hormuz, right?
Yes. It's one of the most critical maritime choke points on the planet. Over 14 million barrels of oil pass through it every single day.
14 million. That's hard to even picture.
It's massive. And when the tensions spiked, the disruptions were immediate. Major shipping giants like Maersk literally paused their routes through the area because it was just too dangerous to sail.
That alone chokes off global supply. But the source outlines a perfect storm of bottlenecks hitting all at once.
It was a scenario of zero spare capacity. At the exact same time the strait was threatened, Iraqi oil exports were mysteriously falling. A major Saudi Arabian refinery had to be temporarily closed.
It just kept piling up.
And on top of all that, OPEC plus the cartel of major oil-producing nations announced they were pausing their planned April production increases.
Mm-hmm.
So the ships are afraid to sail, the refineries are offline, and the people who control the taps are refusing to pump more.
Okay, wait. I have to challenge the math on this.
Let's hear it.
If Maersk is literally stopping its ships and the refineries are closed, then yes, there is physically less oil. But is an 18% price hike in less than a week purely because of actual missing barrels of oil? Or are we blaming supply chains when this is really just Wall Street speculators throwing gasoline on the fire because they're afraid of a long war?
Oh, it is heavily driven by the speculators. And to understand why, you have to look at how the futures market works.
Right, the paper contracts.
Exactly. A futures contract is essentially a paper promise to buy a barrel of oil at a set price next month. When the market fears a prolonged conflict, speculative hedge funds don't buy physical barrels of oil.
Where would they even put them?
Right. Instead, they pour billions of dollars into buying up those paper promises.
Because they're betting that oil will be even scarcer and more expensive by the time next month rolls around.
Exactly. And by buying up all the paper contracts today, they drive the price up instantly. This speculative frenzy artificially exaggerates the physical shortage. The literal boats might be delayed by a few days, but the paper market is pricing in a worst-case scenario where the boats don't move for 6 months.
Wow. So if the gold traders were betting on human anxiety, the oil traders were betting on the literal engines of the global economy starving for fuel.
That's a great summary.
But just as oil seemed ready to rocket toward $100 a barrel, a sudden political intervention completely changed the narrative, proving that prices aren't just dictated by supply and demand.
Right, they're also dictated by government leverage.
Let's look at the afternoon of March 6th. Oil prices had been unstoppable all week, finally seeing a pullback. And the source data points to a specific catalyst.
The news out of Washington?
Yeah. Announcements came out that the Trump administration planned to tap into emergency petroleum reserves and that the U.S. Treasury was preparing measures to combat rising energy prices. And again, just reiterating our impartiality rule here regarding political administrations, we're just looking at the market reaction.
And that reaction was instantaneous. Investors immediately started taking profits, leading to a high-level oscillation in prices.
But if the world physically needs oil because the Strait of Hormuz is bottlenecked, shouldn't the speculators just buy up the emergency oil too? Why does an announcement scare them off?
Because releasing emergency reserves isn't just about adding physical liquid to the market. It's a psychological weapon.
To cool down the panic.
Exactly. It breaks that one-way street mentality. Hedge funds were betting heavily on $100 oil because they assumed supply was entirely restricted. But when a major government signals it will flood the market with millions of barrels from its strategic reserves, The speculators suddenly realize they're picking a fight with a whale that has endless capital.
The government can just pull a lever that instantly crushes their profitable trades.
Precisely. The speculators look at the announcement and realize the risk has become too high. So they immediately start selling their futures contracts to lock in the millions of dollars in profits they've already made that week.
Taking their chips off the table.
Right. And this massive wave of selling causes the price of oil to drop before a single drop of emergency oil is actually pumped into a physical pipeline.
That is incredible. The mere threat of the reserve is enough to break the panic.
The mechanics of fear really do work in both directions.
Okay, so we've mapped out this massive global financial drama. We've got algorithmic gold crashes and paper oil contracts exaggerating physical choke points. Now that we've done that, what does it mean for you sitting at home?
Let's translate this into real-world action.
Yeah, let's draw directly from the source's concluding recommendations. How do we handle gold?
The action plan for gold is entirely about defensive patience. Do not chase the highs.
So if I get an alert on my phone that gold is up 2% today, don't buy.
Do not buy. You've already missed the boat. The smart money is already planning their exit. The text suggests waiting for established support levels to stabilize, somewhere around $5,000 to $5,100 internationally, or 1130 to 1150 RMB domestically.
And if you are going to invest, how should you do it?
Stick to physical bank bars or heavily regulated ETFs. And absolutely avoid high leverage futures contracts. Otherwise, those quantitative algorithms we discussed earlier will automatically liquidate your account while you're sleeping.
I love that. And there was also one highly specific, incredibly relatable tip from the text regarding weddings.
Oh, this is a great one.
If you're getting married and need gold jewelry, don't buy the flat, fixed-price items at the retail jewelry store during a market panic.
Right, because you aren't just paying for the gold. You are paying for the brand's arbitrary panic markup.
Exactly. The text advises going for the basic, traditional designs that are priced purely by the gram with low labor fees. That's a direct, practical shield against market volatility.
Yeah.
You're anchoring your purchase to the actual physical weight of the commodity.
It strips all the speculation out of a personal purchase.
It's so smart. Now, what about crude oil?
The takeaways there are even more blunt. Unless you are a seasoned professional, stay far away from oil futures. Do not touch them.
Because of that volatility index hitting 70.
Exactly. The market is behaving so erratically that a single headline about a cargo ship can wipe out your portfolio in 10 minutes. And the source also warns against blindly chasing energy mutual funds right now.
Right, because by the time the 18% jump makes the evening broadcast, the big players are already cashing out.
The easy money has already been made.
But there is a very immediate real-world action you can take. Expect gas prices at the pump to rise in the coming weeks as those expensive barrels make their way through the refineries.
So maybe go fill up your car's tank right now.
Literally, right now. Grab your keys and beat the price update.
It's the best way to control what you can actually control.
So to wrap up this deep dive, we've seen how just 6 days of human panic and machine logic can completely scramble the markets. Going forward, the ultimate variables are going to be how the Middle East situation develops day by day, and what the Federal Reserve actually decides at its upcoming March meeting.
But, you know, analyzing these frantic six-day swings actually reveals a much more profound long-term question. There's a detail hidden deeper in the source data that really makes you reconsider the whole board.
Oh, right. I remember this. What did they find?
The source mentioned in passing that despite the wild short-term algorithmic drop in gold we just spent half the time discussing, global central banks have been net buyers of gold for 16 consecutive years.
Wait. 16 years nonstop.
Yes. For nearly two decades, through market crashes, tech booms, pandemics, the sovereign institutions that literally print our money have been quietly, relentlessly trading it in for physical gold.
That completely changes the scale of what we are looking at.
It does. So I want to leave you with this to ponder. If the smartest, largest financial institutions in the world have been quietly stockpiling gold for nearly two decades, are these violent six-day algorithmic price crashes just a distraction?
Wow.
What do global central banks know about the long-term future of our money that the short-term algorithmic traders are completely missing?
Now that is a mechanism worth thinking about the next time your phone buzzes with a frantic market alert. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the headlines, and we will catch you next time.